Our study continues in the 19th chapter of 2 Samuel. David is returning to the city of Jerusalem to regain his throne. He has just defeated the forces of Absalom, who rebelled against him and who took the throne away from him. He had to flee across Jordan over into the land of Gilead, and now he has returned by crossing over the Jordan River back to Jerusalem. And so, in this part of the 19th chapter, we're having some accounts given of some things that happened, some loose ends that are being tied down now as David goes back to Jerusalem. And beginning in verse 31, "And Barzillai, the Gileadite, came down from Rogalim." Now, Barzillai was a very wealthy man. He was a noble. He lived in this part of Gilead that was close to where David was when David was located in the city of Mahanaim. And he was in the city of Rogalim. And while David was there, Barzillai gave him a lot of assistance and the material things that he needed to help support himself. And so we find then that he has come down from his city of Rogalim, and he went over Jordan with the king to conduct him over Jordan. He came to conduct him over, to assist him, to be with him, as he went over Jordan, going back to home, and which was Jerusalem for David. And of course, we know then that this man was a very dedicated follower of David, and had David lost the battle, had Absalom won the battle, then no doubt he would have suffered greatly for the assistance that he gave to David. Now, Barzillai, verse 32, was a very aged man, even 80 years old. So he was 80 years old now. And we can see that his activities would have to be somewhat slowed down due to this great age. And he had provided the king of sustenance while he lay at Mahanaim, for he was a very great man. That's just repeating again what we've already said, that he was of great assistance to David while he was over at Mahanaim, while he was under fire from Absalom, while the whole nation, it seemed, practically had turned against him. This man gave him great assistance. And he was a great man, though he had a great estate. He had the ability to do this. And of course, what better use can be made of a great estate than to assist others, and especially to assist others who are fellow servants of the household of God. So we see this man Barzillai must have been a very righteous person. And you know, among the things that we're going to be judged for on the judgment day are going to be whether or not we have fed those that are hungry, clothed those that were naked, visited those that were sick and in prison, and given water to those that were thirsty, and so forth. Helping fellow humans in the very most basic needs that they might have. And those that Jesus will ask about that on the judgment day will say, "When saw we thee hunger? When saw thee we naked? And when saw we thee thirsty?" And he'll say, "And as much as you did it to the least one of these, you did it to me." So that really, when we're helping somebody, we're actually helping the Savior, because we are alleviating human suffering and distress, which he wants to happen. And so here, this man was helping David. He was helping the forefather of our Savior, the type of our Savior. And he was helping him by giving him these basic things that he had need of. So he was a very great man, and he put his goods to the very best use that they could be made of them to help somebody like David. "And the king said unto Barzillai, Come thou over with me, and I will feed thee with me in Jerusalem." So he invites him to come on to Jerusalem and to live with him in Jerusalem. "I'll provide everything you need now. Now that I'm back on the throne, I can repay. I can give you anything that's within my power. And so I, too, am a very great man." "And Barzillai said unto the king, How long have I to live that I should go up with the king into Jerusalem? I am this day 80 years old." So he makes a good point here. He says, I'm not going to live very much longer. This is not the time for me to be beginning a new life, for me to be starting over with a new phase of things and moving into Jerusalem. I'm well settled in my home city of Rogalim. I have everything that I need. And I'm not at that stage of life where I can begin a new endeavor like moving into Jerusalem to be with the king. He says, I'm 80 years old. And can I discern between good and evil? Can thy servant taste what I eat or what I drink? Can I hear any more the voice of singing men and singing women? Wherefore then should thy servant be yet a burden unto my lord the king? All of my physical processes have slowed down. I don't have the ability to discern between the finer points of things like I used to could. I can't appreciate the singing of men and women like I have been in the past. I'll just be a burden to you because I am of great age and my physical processes are all weaker and much slower than they used to be. So that's the argument that he makes. And so he says in verse 36, thy servant will go a little way over Jordan with the king, and why should the king recompense it me with such a reward? I'm just going to go with you a little ways over Jordan. I'm just going to see that you are able to make it back to Jerusalem as comfortable as possible and as safely as possible. And this doesn't require any great reward to be given to me. So in verse 37, he tells what he wants to happen. He says, let thy servant, I pray thee, turn back again, that I may die in mine own city and be buried by the grave of my father and of my mother. I want to go back to my own hometown, the city where I've lived for so long, where I'm so well known, where everything is so familiar to me, and there I want to be buried in that grave that's prepared for me by my father and my mother. Then he further proposes to David, but behold thy servant Chimham. Now Chimham was Barzillai's son, and so he proposes that David give some of these favors that he wants Barzillai to have to his son Chimham. Behold thy servant Chimham, let him go over with my lord the king, and do to him what shall seem good unto thee. So you favor my son in the place of the favor you're going to give me. And the king answered, Chimham shall go over with me, and I will do to him that which shall seem good unto thee. So Barzillai says, you do good what seems good to you, David. But David says, he'll go with me, but I'll do unto him what seems good to you. The thing that you would like to have, for him to have, that I will see to it that he does have. And whatsoever thou shalt require of me, that will I do for thee. So he tells Barzillai, when you get back home, anything that you need over there in that land far off from the capital, over in the land of Gad, whatever you may need there, I'll do it for you. Whatever you require, whatever you ask me, I will give you that in assistance. Now, we find that David probably did give Chimham a country estate near Bethlehem. For we read of a place that is called the Habitation of Chimham that was allotted to him probably out of David's paternal estate that was located near Bethlehem. And so David did take care of this son of Barzillai. Verse 39, and all the people went over Jordan, and when the king was come over, the king kissed Barzillai and blessed him, and he returned unto his own place. So there we have a very happy and satisfactory ending to this story of Barzillai, to this relationship that he had with David. And we see that both men really accomplished their purpose. David was able to come back to the throne. Barzillai was able to give him the assistance that he wanted him to have. So he kissed Barzillai and blessed him and returned unto his own place. We know that this man must have had a lot of satisfaction in knowing that he'd been of such assistance to David. He'd given him what he had to give when David was in a time of need. And David had offered him all that he could offer him to repay him. And Barzillai was satisfied to be able to go back home and there to die in his own city. Verse 40, then the king went on to Gilgal, and Chimham went on with him. Now Gilgal is a city that's close to the Jordan River. It's actually the first place where the children of Israel made an encampment after they originally crossed this Jordan River back when they were first coming into the land of Canaan. And here they renewed the rite of circumcision. And this word Gilgal means the wheel or the going around. And Chimham, the son of Barzillai, was with him. But at the Gilgal, we see then that all the people of Judah conducted the king and also half the people of Israel. So there was a large number of the Israelites, of the other tribes, that were waiting at Gilgal to meet David. And they then, along with the tribe of Judah, conducted the king. Now we're going to see that a strife arises, though, between the people. And this seems to be a strife over a rather trivial matter, but nevertheless, it is enough of a problem that it's mentioned here, and it seems to not die in this account of it, but that there's going to be trouble later on as a result of this ill feeling between the people in this nation. Verse 41 says, "And behold, all the men of Israel came unto the king and said unto the king, Why have our brethren, the men of Judah, stolen thee away, and have brought the king and his household and all David's men with him over Jordan?" Now the complaint is this: why has just the tribe of Judah taken the honor of bringing you across the Jordan River and bringing you up to this point of Gilgal? Why were not the rest of us let in on this? Why were not we given the opportunity to assist in bringing you back across the Jordan River? And I'm sure a part of their argument also was that we were the first to want to assist you. We were more forward than they were in the beginning. And this is given back in the 11th verse of this chapter, in which the 11th verse says, "And King David sent to Zadok and to Abiathar the priest, saying, Speak unto the elders of Judah, saying, Why are ye the last to bring the king back to his house, seeing the speech of all Israel is come to the king, even to his house?" So the other 10 tribes, those besides Judah and Simeon, they had already made it known to the king that they wanted to bring him back. And the king had to prod Judah, had to have the priests to go speak to the elders, to prod Judah to come on and to be a participant in this. Then when Judah did decide that they were interested in bringing the king back, then they went and brought him back without letting the other tribes know. And so the other tribes now are complaining to David about this. Why have our brethren, the men of Judah, stolen thee away and brought you back over Jordan and didn't even say anything to us about it? So here's the answer in verse 42 that the men of Judah give. "And all the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, Because the king is near kin to us. Wherefore then be ye angry for this matter? Have we eaten at all of the king's cost, or hath he given us any gift?" So their answer was, well, the reason we did this first, the reason we were so forward and went ahead and didn't let you know that we were participating in this at this time, was that he's kin to us. He's near kin to us. And we haven't cost him anything. He hadn't spent anything on us. He hadn't given us any gift. We're not trying to get any ulterior position as a result of what we're doing here. It's just because we're kin to him. But now notice the way the argument goes here. The men of Israel have a counter position. Verse 43, "And the men of Israel answered the men of Judah and said, We have 10 parts in the king, and we have also more right in David than ye." So they say there's 10 tribes of us that he's representing. So when you want to divide who has the most interest, we have 10 parts interest to your 2 parts. We have a lot more interest in David than you have. And so why then did you despise us, that our advice should not be first had in bringing back our king? Our advice came before yours did. It was had first, but yet you cast it aside and you went ahead without us and presume that we were not interested enough to bring him back. So you see, there's a discussion, there's an argument, there's a disagreement between these two parts of Israel. One part saying, well, we went ahead because he's kin to us, and we didn't cost him anything by doing it. And the other part says, yes, but we have 10 parts to your 2 parts interest in him. There's more of us, there's more interest on our part than your part. And so you've actually despised us by not following our advice in the beginning, and let's all go together. And this concludes by saying, "And the words of the men of Judah were fiercer than the words of the men of Israel." Some say that the argument that the people of Judah had was a more weighty argument. It carried more weight, and consequently that they really won the discussion. But others say that their words were fiercer in that they brought about more fear in the way that they presented their argument and the way that they presented their point, so that it caused more fear to be evoked among the other 10 tribes, and so they won out just simply on having a more fierce approach in the argument. But nevertheless, this is not a a good thing for the nation to be arguing among itself, especially over such a trivial matter as this, and it's going to have some deep-seated feelings and cause trouble later on. So this concludes the 19th chapter of 2 Samuel. We're now ready to move into the 20th chapter. And in this 20th chapter, we see more trouble for David. It seems that he no sooner gets over one problem until another problem arises in its place. And this seems to have been a situation over such a trivial matter. These tribes had a dispute with each other about who had the most part in David, or who had the right to go meet him and bring him across the Jordan River, and they were feuding about it. And the previous chapter closes with the fact that it seems that the words of the men of Judah were fiercer than those of Israel, and it may even be that David took their part, that he showed some partiality, but regardless, these men of the north, these 10 tribes of the north, rebelled. And they said, but if we, you know, we're supposed to have 10 parts in David, and you don't want to recognize that, so we'll have no part in David. So the first verse of chapter 20 says, and there happened to be there a man of Belial, or Belial that can be pronounced, whose name was Sheba, the son of Bichri, a Benjamite. And he blew a trumpet and said, we have no part in David, neither have we inheritance in the son of Jesse, every man to his tents, O Israel. So we see another rebellion. This man Sheba, no doubt, was a prominent person. He might have been very prominent in the rebellion of Absalom. But now that there is this dispute among the tribes, he then takes the opportunity to call off the northern tribes and say, we'll have no part in David. We insisted that we should have 10 parts, that we should have 10 to 2, and whenever David seems to be partial against us, then we'll have no part. That seems to be what's being said here. And it's all over such a trivial dispute. There needed not be any problem at all. David could very well have assured these 10 tribes that no offense was intended, that he would do all within his power to give them their 10 parts. But for some reason or other, they felt shunned. They felt that they had been run under by the men of Judah, and so that just turned them off completely. And we can see how men can be so fickle, and we can see how such a small thing can create such a great amount of trouble. That how great a fire, or great a matter, a small fire can kindle. And this happens, of course, over and over as a part of human nature. We see trouble in the church many times, and it comes up over little personality conflicts, minor disputes, things that are really not doctrinal points, and then it causes a great amount of trouble. So verse 2 says, so every man of Israel went up after David and followed Sheba the son of Bichri, but the men of Judah clave unto their king from Jordan even to Jerusalem. So he hadn't even gotten past the city of Gilgal here, it seems, whenever this rebellion comes up. And the nation is now divided. All those to the north, those 10 tribes, and this is probably a thing done by their elders and their leaders, those 10 tribes now are following after Sheba. They're not going to follow David. But the men of Judah, they remained faithful to the king, to David, and they brought him on from Jordan even to Jerusalem. So we see now that the nation is in a state of division, a tremendous problem here, and it's a problem that's going to have to be dealt with. This is going to be another conflict, another war, and this is still all probably a part of the punishment that David is deemed to have by prophecy as a result of his sin with Bathsheba and the killing of her husband Uriah. Now this third verse tells of another event before we get on with these problems on a national scale. And David came to his house at Jerusalem, and the king took the 10 women his concubines, whom he had left to keep the house, and put them in ward, and fed them, but went not in unto them. So they were shut up unto the day of their death, living in widowhood. Now originally, when David had taken these concubines, when he'd multiplied to himself wives, he'd gone against the teaching of the law. This was not to be done, but David had done it contrary to the law. and it had brought about a lot of problems for him. He now was ashamed of their behavior, and what he does here is no doubt as a result of the sin that they'd committed with Absalom. When Absalom went into these 10 women in order to create a greater breach between him and David, and he did this at the advice of Ahithophel, and he was successful in making a greater breach, all right, because when David got back to the city of Jerusalem, he was so ashamed of this act. He was so ashamed of what these women had done that he no longer regarded them as his wives. He no longer went in unto them. He no longer lived with them. But he put them in a place that would be a place of seclusion. They were shut up. They were not to be seen. And this then would keep the rest of the nation from being reminded of this shameful thing by seeing these women parade around. So they were put in a shut-up place, and they were kept there until the day of their death, living in a state which is described here as widowhood. It was as though they had no husband. It was as though they had never married or had David to die. And this was the severity of their seclusion, living in a state like widowhood. And we can see that David then must have been deeply ashamed of what these women had done. This was a scar upon his life, upon his family, upon his existence from this day forward. And it was one of those things that was truly a shameful situation. But it was a result, originally, of sin on the part of David. So we're seeing here many, many problems in the life of David. And at the base of each one of these problems, there is some sort of sin. Either sin done by David, or jealousy, envy, strife on the part of his countrymen. Some kind of a sin, something that's displeasing to God that brings about these troubles. We're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.